my way, with you nestled by my side, tasting your sweet perfume in the air.
Hello, Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Gantoff coming to you from San Antonio, Texas, on RBN with the Dan Koff Report here on this Friday. And what is it now? I think it is November 4th. In this particular case, we have all of our usual categories, and my sidekick, Patrick Slattery, is with me today to go over a couple of things related to these categories. We, of course, have Russia and Ukraine up there. We are going to major somewhat as well on the Texas governor's race and the latest numbers there, as well as what Dr. Slattery thinks in regard to the way these midterms are going to come out. And what is fascinating about analyzing this is to look at the polls in regard to who finds what issues to be important. So we will be taking a look big time at the coming election, the off-year election, both in the state of Texas as well as around the country. In the state of Texas, there are two races in particular that I'm interested in looking at. One is Greg Abbott versus Beto O'Rourke, and the latest poll numbers there. The other one is a district attorney race right here in San Antonio between a Republican named Mark LaHood and an incumbent Democrat of the name of Joe Gonzalez, who keeps taking money from George Soros and the Open Society folks. So that'll be an important thing to take a look at in regard to Texas politics and in regard to the city of San Antonio specifically. Other than that, we obviously have Russia and Ukraine. We've got Iran, Israel, Lebanon, Syria, Brazil, North Korea, and Ethiopia to look at if we so choose. Obviously, we won't get to all of those. Probably we'll discuss Israel today in particular because of Mr. Netanyahu's re-election. He's going to be the prime minister of Israel again. He and his Likud party put together a victory of 64 seats out of 120 total. So Bibi is going to be back in the saddle as the prime minister of Israel. What does that mean for the future? What does that mean for the situation in the Middle East? What does that mean for Israel's relationship with both the United States and with Putin's Russia? What does Netanyahu really have planned in regard to Iran? That's going to be something, of course, that I think Patrick Slattery has a great interest in, and will have a lot of input on that particular subject as well. Other than that, I have the usual categories. We may not major on as much today in terms of airtime, but we certainly will be there in terms of links, news links that will be posted with this show description after the fact. And in that regard, you will recall what some of those are, in addition to Russia and Ukraine, in addition to Iran and Operation Ajax, and Israel and Lebanon and Syria and Brazil and North Korea and Ethiopia as a general foreign category. We'll also get into the whole question, as we've already mentioned, of the Texas governor's race and the off-year elections. We're going to be taking a look, at least in terms of news links to be posted, in regard to culture and in regard to friendly frontal assaults on the First Amendment of the week. We're going to be having a general category once again for politics and economy. There's going to be a history category again. Obviously, there will be a books category and a theology category and so forth and so on. But at this particular juncture, I think the Texas election coming up on Tuesday, the off-year election generally around the country on Tuesday, and what these poll numbers show will probably be our basic topic for today, along with a brief look at Russia and Ukraine. Patrick, what do you have to say before we go to a first break?
Oh, well, I don't have much to say. I'm curious about that. I have heard that, you know, well, the Israeli situation, you've got Netanyahu and anti-Netanyahu, and they've been evenly divided and had all these, they had several, what, about three or four hung elections before finally moving over to a coalition, including these two leaders who both have had stints as prime minister. So is that about to crumble? Are they about to have another election, or is this going to be, is there a small party in the Knesset that's going to switch sides and bring Netanyahu back? How is that working?
Well, apparently Netanyahu is guaranteed to be the next prime minister. Supposedly, his coalition has a solid majority of 64 out of 120 Knesset seats put together. But based on the revolving door character of this in recent years, it'll certainly bear watching in regard to the direction that he takes the country in, which I think is fairly predictable.
Was it through an election? Did they just have an election?
Yes. And with that election in mind, Netanyahu has won it. the incumbent Prime Minister Yair Lapid has conceded to Netanyahu. He has wished him well. And at least from my own personal perspective, it's kind of difficult to see where this takes Israel other than in the same direction, which involves, as near as I can tell, further illegal settlements, further domestic disturbances that involve violence, both on the West Bank and in Gaza, as well as in Israeli cities generally. And, of course, the $64,000 question, with all of this militancy going on in regard to anti-Putin, anti-Russia policy on the part of the Biden administration, will the Biden administration go along with what would appear to be a strong lobby both within its midst as well as in the Congress generally of the United States, as well as with the Netanyahu coalition in regard to potentially attacking Iran? We look at Iran, of course, these threats from emanating from Israel are kind of an ongoing thing. But nonetheless, there are some suggestions that maybe, just maybe, there might be, God forbid, an Israeli preemptive strike this time. But my own prediction in that regard is that what would appear to be happening right now is that Israeli intelligence and the American CIA and the British MI6, just to name three, along with the Saudi Arabians, would seem to be back in the saddle in regard to the promotion of extreme domestic disturbance in Iran that has as its basis, its initial new basis anyway, this controversial police case surrounding the death of a 22-year-old woman and the circumstances under which she died while in the custody of the Tehran police. That seems to be the linchpin for all kinds of spins from Western media and arguably from Western intelligence in regard to the nature of her passing, which dovetail with a narrative that is designed to inflame domestic passions in Iran at the same time that there have been ongoing acts of violence elsewhere. There was this incident, of course, in recent days in Shiraz involving an attack that apparently involved Takfiris, who attacked this Shia mosque in Shiraz. I believe 15 people were killed. There have been several other episodes of violence that have involved things going on not simply in Shiraz and Tehran, but also in the northwestern part of Iran, where you're not only dealing with domestic issues in regard to domestic disturbances, but clearly this whole tension that has renewed itself between Armenia and Azerbaijan is playing a role in Iran, beefing up its own northwestern borders in regard to its own military capabilities, at the same time that the Iranians are keeping an eye on these situations involving Iraq and involving military activities in Iraq that would suggest that the West is renewing some attempts to utilize whatever means possible to attack whatever faction it needs to attack in Iraq that is perceived to be pro-Tehran, pro-Iran. So a lot of tensions going on here related to domestic situations in Iran and the apparent exacerbation of those tensions from the usual outside forces, which involve, again, the United States, Britain, and Saudi Arabia and Israel, to name the top four in any order that you choose. And in this particular circumstance, the MEK, the Mujahideen-e-Khalq, the MEK, MKO people that are always available to conduct terror operations in this day and age on behalf of the Big Four against the Tehran regime seem to be, for the moment, not as active, at least for the moment, as these Takfiri organizations, which clearly have the same backing in Iran that they have had in Syria, with activities aimed against the Assad regime and activities, of course, that are presumably being undertaken at the behest of American and Israeli and British and Saudi Arabian intelligence. So this is the situation that we seem to be confronting right now in regard to Israel and the re-election of Benjamin Netanyahu, once again, as prime minister of that country, at the same time that this occurs in the midst of a terrific amount of tension that is going on domestically within Iran, that clearly is being fanned in terms of intensity by outside forces, where it's arguable that the Operation Ajax of 1953 is something that the same forces are attempting to enact in 2022, at the same time that if that fails, if the Operation Ajax 2022 operation fails, then of course we might be looking once again at the very, very serious suggestions that Mr. Netanyahu comes up with from time to time, that now would seem to be the time, in his judgment, for an attack on Iran militarily, which of course is about the last thing on earth that anyone needs, especially in regard to the ongoing situation between Russia and Ukraine and the intensity of that situation, various things that we could discuss after the first break in regard to what is going on there. And curiously enough, one other thing that that I have done in the last day or two is that I showed up at several early voting locations in San Antonio and have asked people willing to talk to me, and virtually everyone was willing to talk to me, by the way, not about who they voted for, but what particular issues they found to be most important to them in regard to these current off-year elections, both in Texas as well as nationally, and where they were willing to do so. I asked them if they had a party affiliation. The fascinating thing is that this very unscientific poll that I was getting in terms of my own much smaller random sample did seem to pretty much correspond in numbers to the last couple of major polls in Texas in regard to these questions, as regard to what the, and in the same regard, the numbers that appear to be taking place in polls on a national basis in regard to why people are voting the way they are voting. And will be voting on Tuesday, those who have not engaged in early voting. And this this will be quite something to watch in terms of what the final numbers are. And certainly since we're doing a Dankoff report today, I'll want the Slattery report on your predictions on what you think the final numbers might be in terms of the U.S. House of Representatives, as well as the final composition of the U.S. Senate that will be coming in with that new House of Representatives in January. I know that we're both engaging in guesswork, but I'll be curious to see what your take is.
First of all, so we're not going to. I mean, we're just going to do. Well, there will be breaks, but we're not going to announce the breaks. We're going to do it National Bugle style,
okay,
for engineering reasons. And then I wanted to ask you regarding Israel. And I paid attention to Israel and Israeli politics for a long time, but honestly, I stopped. And you had, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu was prime minister for, I guess, a total of around 10 years. He had one relatively short stint in the 1990s, and then, what, about 9 years or so more recently? And that made him Israel's longest-serving prime minister. I guess he beat out Ben David, right? What was the guy's name? David Ben-Gurion. Sorry about
yes.
that. And so, honestly, I mean, I know the Israeli electorate became very, very divided, pro-Netanyahu, anti-Netanyahu. You know, I know there's some corruption issues. In terms of policy, and maybe there's some policy issues regarding whether Orthodox, you know, the ultra-Orthodox are in the military or not. I think there's some things like that. But regarding policies that we would care about, that would matter to us, what were, you know, over the past few years, and in particular in this most recent election, what were the issues that were dividing the pro-Netanyahu and the anti-Netanyahu sides?
Well, from my perspective, that's a little bit hard to determine. I guess there have been some issues related to allegations of Netanyahu's personal corruption. We'll put that issue aside just for a moment and look at some of the policy issues. In regard to the larger policy issues that involve Israel and the Israeli people and the Israeli government and their foreign policy, I don't see that there is much to talk about that is a significant change. I mean, what do we have here? We have the ongoing expansion of Israel in terms of occupied territories. We have the ongoing subsidy of Israel by the United States government, controlled by the Israeli lobby, for all of these activities. In regard to the whole issue of Jerusalem as the so-called United Capital of Israel, they seem to have achieved that objective in regard to the presidential, last couple of presidential administrations of the United States. And the other question related to foreign policy, as it relates to Iran, I think the whole question in regard to that situation is that I see no one in any mainstream Israeli political party that would fail to acknowledge, at least in private conversations, if not public statements, that regime change in Iran has been an objective of theirs since 1979, as it has been with the United States government under both Democratic and Republican administrations. The big difference, if there is a difference, and I have no inside information on how this plays out between the Netanyahu coalition and that those folks in the Knesset that are not going to be a part of that coalition on the whole issue of what will prove to be the better policy for Israel, a preemptive attack on Iran militarily or the ongoing attempts in conjunction with American and British and Saudi Arabian intelligence to exacerbate domestic political and economic tensions in Iran as a means of eventually achieving a regime change where someone would replace the mullahs in power who would be far more amenable to the desires of these four governments in particular that are attempting to overthrow the Iranian regime and have been for a very, very long period of time. You know, there has there
okay.
was a, yes.
I just want to ask, so the past, what, a year and a half or whatever it is, I guess Netanyahu was ousted from office more, it had to be after Trump supposedly lost the fake election. But so over these past year and a half or whatever it's been, you had Naftali Bennett was the prime minister, and now Yair Lapid.
Lapid, L-A-P-I-D, yes.
Yeah. And has there been any noticeable policy shift? Have they been less aggressive towards Iran? And, of course, during this period of time, you've had the Ukraine thing, and the Israelis, notably, did not go along with the sanctions and have taken a rather, at least nominally, neutral stance. So is there going to be a change? Do you think that it's going to be that Netanyahu will be more aggressive towards Iran, and what will he change the relative neutrality towards Russia? What do you think?
I think that is the $64,000 question. You've identified the two areas where we have to wonder what his return to power is going to mean. It seems to me that Netanyahu has been itching for a long time to engage in an overt military attack on Iran. The only thing that might continue preventing that is if the Biden administration asks him to hold off on that particular idea. But it's frighteningly so, I'm not sure that they will. And in regard to this whole situation of Putin's Russia and in regard to this Russian-Ukrainian war, you've identified the other issue, and that is there going to be a change in Israeli policy toward Putin's Russia that will be more militantly pro-Ukraine than has been the case up to this point? The Israelis certainly have not been anti-Zelensky and anti-Ukraine, but there have been complaints, of course, coming from the Zelensky regime that they're not getting the sort of overall support from Israel that they think they should have. Will Netanyahu listen to that? And more importantly, will Netanyahu be working in conjunction with Biden and with Victoria Nuland and with Tony Blinken to bring Israeli policy completely back in line with a more militantly pro-Zelensky, anti-Putin stance? That's the $64,000 question. I'm not sure which way that goes, but I'm going to go out on a limb with the full recognition that I could be way wrong and say that I would not be at all surprised if Netanyahu does bring Israeli foreign policy back into a complete lineup with the Biden.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Amazon customer, 5 stars. Honestly, this stuff works. Nick, easy to take capsules. For those who can't handle the liquid drops, easy to take Extendivite capsules do the same job. Karoka Fam, works great. Like Extendivite very much. Seems to work as advertised. Thanks. Arlene, 5 stars. Love this product, Extendivite. Terry W., 5 stars. Can't say enough. Great product. Freya, 5 stars. I just ordered another. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
And make the world go away.
Full recognition that I could be way wrong and say that I would not be at all surprised if Netanyahu does bring Israeli foreign policy back into a complete lineup with the Biden administration on this whole situation involving Russia and the situation involving Zelensky in Ukraine. But we'll have to see on that. This is a very, very complicated relationship, obviously, in a complicated situation that any Israeli administration is going to be dealing with, both with the Ukrainians and with Putin. And in this particular respect, it reminds me very much of the rather complicated relationship that Putin, in turn, has with Erdogan of Turkey, where you had this this agreement on the part of Putin's Russia, at least for now, to re-enter this so-called grain deal with the Ukrainians, despite the fact that it's pretty much been acknowledged by now that the Ukrainians utilized the so-called peaceful corridor in the northern region of the Black Sea from Odessa going eastward, that they utilized this peaceful corridor that had been agreed upon with Putin for the purpose of facilitating these grain shipments, that in conjunction with British help, that the Zelensky regime subsequently attacked the Russian Navy at Sevastopol in Crimea with drones utilizing this peaceful corridor. The fact that Putin has agreed to re-enter this deal after extensive conversation with Erdogan indicates certainly that Russia recognizes the complicated character of its own relationship with Erdogan in regard to issues related to the Bosphorus and the Dardanelles, certainly, and good passage for Russian ships in and out of those. There's also an issue of Russian-Turkish dialogue in regard to how to resolve any differences that they have had in the last 11 years or so as it relates to the Assad regime in Syria and to this whole issue of what to do about these Kurdish nationalist groups in Syria that at one level were giving the Assad regime quite a bit of trouble with both his American and Israeli backing. But having said that, Erdogan clearly doesn't like these Kurdish groups for obvious reasons and is concerned that they could prove to be a very serious domestic problem for him and for his own country's national security. So at the same time that we're seeing all of these complicated factors entering into this relationship between the new version of the Netanyahu government that's coming in matters Russian and Ukrainian as well as Iranian, the same thing seems to be a very complicating factor in the relationship between Vladimir Putin and Erdogan's Turkey in regard to a bizarre set of circumstances where Putin and Erdogan recognize the fact that they need one another for both domestic and foreign reasons, foreign policy reasons, at the same time that Erdogan still Erdogan's Turkey is still a member of NATO. And in this particular situation, I'm sure that Putin has not forgotten that once upon a time, not all that many years ago, a Russian fighter that was shot down by the Turks in Syria, and that this, of course, provoked a major incident between those two governments at that time. So there are a lot of chess pieces on the board, a lot of rearrangement of chess pieces taking place. And we'll just have to wait and see how all of this plays out, but it's a very uncertain time, to say the least.
Well, I do have one point to make about Israel and Netanyahu before we move on. And I wish I could make more, but honestly, I just haven't paid attention to it. There's been so much going on domestically in the United States with the war in Ukraine. I just haven't paid attention, so I'm not going to speculate much. But one point I want to raise and, you know, see what you think about it. In the Obama administration, during the Obama's second term, you had Victoria Nuland as the Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs. And it was during this time that the Iran nuclear deal was negotiated. And the lead negotiator of that was Wendy Sherman. The Secretary of Energy, some Portuguese guy, I can't remember his name, he was also involved in it because of his knowledge of nuclear physics, but the lead negotiator was Wendy Sherman. Tony Blinken also had a role, and at that time, Netanyahu was very much against this Iran nuclear deal. And the way I viewed it at the time was, you had a primarily Israeli Jew first, faction that wanted to that wanted war with Iran, that so Iran is the biggest enemy. And then you had a primarily American Jew first faction led by, Victoria Nuland, who saw Russia as the prime enemy. And so, it's not as if Victoria Nuland is pro-Iranian or anti-Israeli. It's not as if Netanyahu is necessarily pro-Russian, but they viewed, their priorities in terms of their priorities of threats to their own part of the Jewish world, whether that's the diaspora or Israel, they had different priorities.
Yes, and it's going to be interesting to see how that sort of diversity and this difference in priorities is going to play out as we're actually in the process of seeing Netanyahu returning to power. He'll have 64 seats out of 120 in the Knesset in his coalition.
Anytime you're feeling lonely, anytime you're feeling blue.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news. Real talk, real people. because you can handle the truth.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of happy packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
You say you want me back again. That's the time I'll come back home to
yes.
you.
And it's going to be interesting to see how that sort of diversity and this difference in priorities is going to play out as we're actually in the process of seeing Netanyahu returning to power. He'll have 64 seats out of 120 in the Knesset and his coalition.
Yeah, he's returning to power at a time when Newland and Blinken and Sherman are also have also returned to power.
So exactly.
Once again.
Exactly. So this is where we find ourselves as we approach a very, very uncertain situation, not only approaching the midterms, but certainly things that will develop between the end of these midterms and the results of these midterms and the installation of the new Congress, whatever the composition is going to be in January. There's a lot of uncertainty in a lot of things that, you know, we used to think of in terms of, well, this could happen in 6 months, this could happen in 12 months, 18 months. We seem to be in a time of crisis now where we think of the number of things that could change within 24 hours, frankly. So it's a very, very tension-filled situation. Well, let's turn to this whole issue of midterms. Dr. Slattery, you are a long-time political prognosticator, and you're very good at it. What do you hazard as a guess in terms of the composition of a new House of Representatives and a new U.S. Senate in terms of party control of seats? How are you reading this?
Yeah, and I will just say that in terms of being a prognosticator, it's not so much a prognosticator, more of an analyst, because my prognostications, I did correctly prognosticate, and that sounds kind of gross, but I prognosticated Donald Trump's election from pretty early on in 2016, but otherwise I don't have that much of a track record. But regarding the midterms, I do, a lot of people were saying that after after Biden stole the election, that we'll never have free elections again, never have fair elections, or more specifically that the Republicans can never win. And I don't think that was the case. And even if you look at, it's not as if the congressional elections of 2020 were devoid of fakery, but the fakery was primarily on the presidential ballot. And you had these situations, you had the situation where the Republicans actually made very large gains in the House of Representatives, and yet Trump had coattails. It seemed that he had coattails even as a losing presidential candidate. That was very strange. And the House of Representatives, the faking is going to be a lot harder there, because the faking in the 2020 elections was primarily in these large black-run cities of Detroit, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, and Georgia. Atlanta. That yes. was what was critical. And, to get Republican poll watchers who are willing to go into these 100% Democratic precincts as poll watchers, that was tough. And to the extent you got people who were brave enough to go into the ghettos and do poll watching, they were abused, they were insulted and intimidated. And then of course you had in the canvassing centers in these cities, you had situations like putting up cardboard over the windows so that that the canvas watchers couldn't observe. And even if there wasn't cardboard, they were kept so far away because of the deadly coronavirus. They were kept 25 feet away, and you can't watch, you can't observe anything from that distance. And that baking in the inner cities that can alter statewide elections. And the presidential election is actually it is 50, or if you throw in this District of Columbia, 51 statewide elections. But the congressional district elections, and I guess most of the swing, a lot of the swing districts are in areas of suburban areas, or maybe small cities where you just don't have those centers of black 100% Democratic run black precincts that can stuff the ballot box. The swing districts, I just don't think that they are as subject to the fraud. The fraud was taking place in the heavily Democratic districts, which are going to elect Democrat representatives anyway. That's why I think that in the House of Representatives, the last election, what did the Democrats have come out with? 220 seats or 221? It was about 220, very narrow margin in a body of 435. I think they're going below 200. They'll be below 200, and the Republicans will be above 235. As for the Senate, so these same states that were decisive in the 2020 Electoral College, with the exception of Michigan, Michigan doesn't have a Senate race this year, but Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and what did I leave out? Wisconsin. In Georgia, and then also Arizona, which doesn't have the black concentration. That's another key state, and then Nevada, and in all those places, the Republican candidates do seem to be gaining momentum, and even the weakest one, Dr. Oz, looks like he might win in Pennsylvania. Blake Masters might win in. And the thing is, in Pennsylvania, the incumbent who is not running for re-election is a Republican. So the Republicans really need to take that. And then if they can take one of the other states that get the majority, they'll probably take the Senate. And, we can talk about what will be the consequences of a Republican-run Congress. But what do you think?
Well, as I look at numbers, I would suspect that, it would not be unreasonable for the Republicans in terms of seats to go as high as 235 in control. If that materializes, how large is that swing in terms of doing the math?
The swing? It's going to be a gain of at least 20 seats.
I mean,
20 seats, right?
Yes.
So 20 more for the Democrats, 20 more for the Republicans, 20 less for the Republicans.
Yeah, and that would dovetail with figures I've seen from various sources that project the swing from Democrat-controlled seats to Republican at somewhere between 15 to 20. I'll go with 20. I'll support your number on that simply because of the magnitude of the problems in this country that I'll get into here in a minute in terms of why certain voters are voting the way they are, be it Republican or Democrat. But also the fact, as you point out, it's a lot harder to rig congressional district races in the same way that you can potentially rig a presidential election in a statewide race like a U.S. Senate race, going back to these urban areas and the incredible change in numbers in the dead of night, folks, in the dead of night between, say, 11 o'clock at night on election night in 2020 and what we were told the following morning at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. The incredible swing in the numbers that we have never seen before in a presidential race in terms of what was going on as late as 11 o'clock at night, the night before, and what we were told was the case the following morning. You know, Dr. Alan Saprosky, the former U.S. Army War College prof, who is, really a hardcore type guy in terms of analyzing things the way we would tend to do it here on this show and on National Bugle Radio and most of the hosts, if not all of them, at RBN. He was saying that he missed the good old days when prior to all of this mail-in balloting and early voting, you definitely had a result on the night of any given election where there was no chance that one was going to go to bed and find out that in a particular key swing state, there had been a shifting of 350,000 votes in the dead of night. So we'll see what happens in this circumstance. But I'm going to go with your figure, Dr. Slattery, that there will be a 20-seat gain for the Republicans in these House elections on Tuesday. In regard to the Senate, and again, it depends on who you consult on this, one of the major lib news outlets, and I believe it was CNN, to the best of my knowledge, it was CNN. I consulted it 2 days ago, 3 days ago. They were showing that the Republicans, if the election were held right now, the Republicans would win 49 seats, the Democrats 48 seats, with 3 seats up for grabs that will determine the composition of the 2023 Congress or Senate of the United States. I don't know how accurate that prognostication is. And, of course, CNN obviously has a bias that we are all aware of. But that's the way they're reading this. But I would just urge people, and, of course, in our show description, I will have a link that will continue to add updates on all of these different stories. But Pennsylvania seems to be a place where there's been a lot of controversy over mail-in ballots and the way that these ballots are marked and counted and so forth. The latest ruling of the state Supreme Court of Pennsylvania basically supports the Republican position that if you have dates on these or a voter rights a date that is erroneous on a mail-in ballot in the external part of the envelope, or if it's something that shows up after Election Day, that as of right now, the state Supreme Court of Pennsylvania has basically stated that those ballots would be disqualified. That would certainly support the Republican position in the state of Pennsylvania on this, but we'll have to keep an eye on it. But certainly in terms of seats, that will be well worth watching. Again, what are we talking about here, Patrick, in addition to Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Nevada, Georgia, and Arizona?
Yeah, and if they're saying that there's 3 elections that are still up for grabs, it would probably be Pennsylvania with Oz and Fetterman, Georgia with Herschel Walker and Warnock, whatever that guy's name. And maybe the other one would be, Arizona with, Blake Masters and Kelly, the former astronaut and and the current husband of, Gabby Giffords, who got shot while she was serving in Congress.
Yes. So those races will be certainly ones to watch in particular. You know what I found interesting, and I mentioned this in the first part of the show, is I have in recent days gone to just a couple of two or three different early voting places in San Antonio, including the one in the neighborhood where I live, and I have stayed well within the legal distance away from polls. But as people would come out, and many people were quite open in chatting about why they voted the way that they did. The numbers I was getting in this totally unscientific poll that I was taking in these respective early voting locations in recent days seemed to be matching pretty much what the poll numbers have been, both here in Texas as well as poll numbers that I have seen from a variety of different places in regard to the issues that were most important to those who voted Republican. As opposed to those who voted largely for the Democratic Party's candidates in this off-year election. Let me share some of these figures with you. Now, here is something that appeared today in Russia Today, and I want to go back and they had run a story on these highly arrogant and racist statements made by someone on this show, The View, which were denigrating white suburban women who would vote Republican in this election. It was in the context of that story, which is currently at RT.com, that some figures were quoted in this story that Russia Today ran. I want to try and get a better fix on where they got those figures, what polling service, what source or sources they relied upon. But they claim, the RT claims, Russia Today claims, that the white women in the United States, and listen to this, folks, white women in the United States represent 20% of the total electorate in the country. That statement was made by Russia Today. 2 months ago, in this same article, it is claimed that the Democratic Party, among white women in the United States, 2 months ago had a 12-point lead. The Democrats had a 12-point lead 2 months ago among white women who stated that they were going to be voting in these off-year elections. Now, here we are 2 months later, and this same RT story claims that now, with these white women in the United States representing 20% of the electorate, that they favor the GOP, the Republican Party, by 15% in these midterms. So the Democrats had a 12-point lead, supposedly, among this constituency, white women, 2 months ago. Now, supposedly, the Republicans lead by 15 points among these women, these white women who are voting in the off-year elections, who, again, supposedly represent, in RT's stats anyway, 20% of the electorate. Dr. Slattery, what's your reaction to that?
Okay, so if you're comparing now to 2 months ago, I think if you were to go back 2 months ago, you're much closer to the overturned Roe versus Wade decision. That probably was factoring into the calculus more. You know, women have been told that abortion is a woman's rights issue. And, you know, I think to a certain extent, there's enough women who have come to believe that the overturning of Roe versus Wade, at least temporarily, gave a boost to the Democrats, who otherwise have very little going for them. But as that kind of fades in the rearview mirror, because I've noticed, you know, when I'm on YouTube or whatever and I see these ads for Democratic candidates, this is one of the main things they focus on is abortion. But as that kind of fades, and, you know, a lot of white women go shopping for food and they can see the prices going up. A lot of white women are victims of crime and they know that this is going on. That these, you know, the issues of crime and inflation, which are big issues in this election, these are issues that would impact white women and that they go against the Democrats. So that's my assessment.
I think that that's what's happening, and I think that there's numerical scientific evidence of that. And again, I go back to Russia Today, which this time for sure I have the quotation on that in terms of the source, the polling source that they used on these numbers. But when you look at it, the Democratic Party, their national leadership, is now quite panicked apparently over the fact that they spent so much advertising money, on promoting abortion, the abortion issue, and so the alleged women's right to choose issue, and this whole issue of election integrity, ho, 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 right? Election integrity and quote-unquote democracy. These were the things that they majored on in attempting to appeal to voters. And yet, every single polling service that I have seen in...
We took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we met up with the British near the town of New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British kept a coming.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening live virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile oxysilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Catch 'em down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Proceed. These are the things that they majored on in attempting to appeal to voters. And yet, every single polling service that I have seen, including the two most reliable ones here in Texas that I am aware of, one is the Texas Politics Project at the University of Texas. Their polling service, I think, has generally been reliable. The numbers they put up last week on the Abbott-Beto O'Rourke governor's race here in Texas, I think, were legitimate numbers. The other one is the Hobby School of Government at the University of Houston, which has historically run a very solid polling service in regard to numbers that have tended, like the University of Texas project, to be pretty close, very close historically to what the final numbers in these matters prove to be. Now, in this regard,
by the way, we're getting close to the end of the show. I'm just letting you know.
Well, this let me say this much so that we don't run overtime here. What are the important issues, folks, in all of these different polls? The important issues, for example, in one of these polling services, 51% on the economy, 51% on the economy, and crime, another major issue with voters in this election. In Texas specifically, border security is yet another major issue among a high percentage of Texas voters who answered these different polling services. Only 9% in this one polling service I consulted, only 9% of the voters in this one random sample said that election integrity and quote unquote democracy had anything to do with what their vote proved to be. The long and the short of it is this, and then we'll be at the end of the hour, that overwhelmingly it is the economy and the issue of gas and food prices and the issue of border security in the state of Texas, crime around the country. These are the major things that a vast percentage of voters said they based their vote upon. That would seem almost inevitably, obviously, to favor the Republican Party. The other thing here in Texas, the Abbott O'Rourke race, the Houston Chronicle at one point last week, we discussed this on the air, had Beto O'Rourke pulling within 2 points of Abbott. I pretty much dismissed that poll as rubbish a week ago based upon the University of Texas numbers, which had Abbott ahead by 11 points. The Hobby School of Government at the University of Houston now has Abbott leading by 13 points over Beto O'Rourke in a random scientific random sample of people surveyed. And I think that that's pretty much the way that race is going to turn out. And certainly the other race in Texas that I'm especially interested in is this whole issue in San Antonio of Mark LaHood, who is running as a Republican for district attorney in Bexar County, as opposed to a George Soros-backed Democrat incumbent by the name of Joe Gonzalez. How many voters in Bexar County, San Antonio, know who George Soros is and that he has been funneling money into the Joe Gonzalez campaign, both the first one as well as now the second one? One other thing that came up in these polls, or didn't come up as the case may be, that somewhat mystifies me, the Russian-Ukrainian war was not seen as particularly significant in the votes of these voters polled, and I find that rather disturbing because that is related to so much else of what's going on.
Wow. Okay, well, I guess we're at the end of the show.
Very good. Thank you, sir, for coming on.
Thank you.
See you next week.
Obstirnt oder steigt, und die Sonne uns sagt, der Tag lieben weiß, oder eiskalt die Nacht. Bestaunt sind die Gesichter, doch nur ist unser Sinn, ja unser Sinn. Es braust unser Panzer im Sturm mit dahin.
Tune in Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 Central, to the Alternative Media with your host, Farron. If you've not been listening, this is some of what you've been missing.
2,000 mules, like you like to say occasionally, Farron, in your face.
They might have a set of lactating mammaries available that could provide milk for their adopted children.
Listen, news media, all pulling off this gigantic fraud.
Rhino, neocon, cucks.
There's this wonderful thing that's called Vote With Your Feet. Move to California.
I am a conspiracy factualist, and everyone else is a reality theorist.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of ships came out of nowhere.
Give me liberty, or let's give you death.
any excuse to go and kill yourself for this fraud of a government. This goes back 100 years.
When they come for your gold, give them a lead. And when they come for your guns, give them the bullets first. And God help us all.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.